In January 1865, the three government commissioners came to examine the track already laid, accompanied by Durant and other officials of the UP. The commissioners accepted, on behalf of the government, the first 40 miles of track, and on the return to Omaha, they wired the Secretary of the Interior that they had found the road in superior condition. President Andrew Johnson accepted the report the same day, and on January 27, the government issued the bonds, each carrying 6% annual interest, payable twice a year. According to the Herald, the commissioners were astonished at Durant's personal omnipresence in every department of the work, his vigilant and untiring watchfulness of all details, and the energy and effective push which he had imparted to the colossal enterprise. In March, the newspaper called him the great manager who is to railroads what Napoleon was to war. Perhaps, but Napoleon's reputation rested on more than 40 miles of track. Durant needed to prove the comparison apt. To do that, he first of all needed to establish a solid organization. He pulled Samuel Reed off his surveying job and put him in charge of construction. He would supervise all grading, track laying, bridging, and tunneling. A tough, demanding position for which he was perfectly suited. In February 1866, Durant put the Casement brothers in charge of track laying. John Stephen Casement, known as Jack, 37 years old, although only 5 feet 4 inches tall, had earned an impressive reputation as a track layer in Ohio. He had risen to brigadier general in the war as a division commander. Stocky, muscular, fearless, General Jack could handle anything, and if he couldn't, his brother could. Only 5 feet tall, 5 feet nothing, according to one wag, Dan Casement was also a veteran. According to a diary kept by one of his UP workers, Dan may have been short and stocky, but once he lifted a 30-foot rail off the ground without any trouble. It weighed about 600 pounds. Between them, the brothers had formed the firm of J.S. and D.T. Casement, which Durant hired and put in charge of laying the track. It was an inspired choice. Durant made other adjustments, but by far his best choice, the one that made the UP possible, was to stick to his determination to lure General Grenville Dodge away from the Army. At the end of February 1866, having failed to get Dodge to sign on with the UP, Durant sent him a telegram suggesting that Dodge might want to take the field as a surveyor. Dodge declined, but in his telegram of reply, dated March 2, he did offer Durant some advice, based on what he had heard about the disorganization and demoralization in Omaha. "Let me impress upon you the importance of commencing the year's work by placing at Omaha a chief in whom you have confidence." Late in April, Durant went to St. Joseph to meet with Dodge and offer him the post of chief engineer of the UP. The general refused to accept unless he received absolute control. He told Doc that his military experience had convinced him that a divided command would never work. As chief engineer, he would obey orders and insist on everyone under me doing the same. Durant agreed. Dodge put the working end of the UP on a military basis. Nearly all his chief subordinates had been in the Union Army, and, with but few exceptions, his graders and track layers had been participants in the war. Without that military organization, it is doubtful that the UP could have been built at all. The UP had farther to go than the CP, and hostile Indians to contend with, plus shortages and the non-existence of timber, water, and other necessities. The Indians out on the Great Plains posed their own threat. With the Civil War over and the UP building, settlers were moving out into what they regarded as their land. The Homestead Act, giving a quarter section of land to settlers, was a magnet. Nebraska gained population so fast that in 1867 it became a state, much earlier than expected. The Pawnee, living in eastern Nebraska, were hang around the forts, as the hostile Indians called them. Surveyor Bissell wrote that the Pawnee were normally friendly, but also that they were more degraded in their habits and ways of living than almost any tribe. They had made their peace with the white men, and many of their warriors had become soldiers in the white man's army. But west of Columbus, Nebraska, the Sioux and Cheyenne were predominant and decidedly hostile. They despised the iron rail, which, along with providing great benefits to the whites, had an additional disadvantage for the Indians in that it split the Great Plains buffalo herd into two parts because buffalo would not cross the tracks. Thus, the UP needed protection from the army, but the army had nowhere near enough men or posts beyond the frontier to provide it. This meant the UP's workers would, in most cases, have to protect themselves. Dodge ordered it. It meant doom for the Indians' way of life. No longer could they be free and independent living off the buffalo herds. They could either follow the way of the Pawnee and live on reservations cared for by the white man, or get killed. As General John Pope, who was replacing Dodge, observed, "The Indian, in truth, no longer has a country. He is reduced to starvation or to warring to the death. The Indian's first demand is that the white man shall not drive off his game and dispossess him of his lands. How can we promise this unless we prohibit emigration and settlement? The end is sure and dreadful to contemplate." Dodge, by contrast, was in agreement with General Phil Sheridan. He had no sympathy for the plight of the Indians and believed there were really no friendly Indians.